This is real news. Where is it? I'm Peter Laufer, co-director of the University of Oregon UNESCO Crossings Institute. So University of Oregon School of Journalism and Communication Professor Dave Markovitz specializes in exactly what we're trying to figure out, deception. And Dave, when you chose to study and become a deception scholar, were you thinking in a news context or were you thinking in a broader human context?
I wasn't necessarily thinking about it in a news context, but certainly over the past 5 to 10 years, we've had to think really deeply about what deception means for journalism, what it means for news consumers. But I began as a young researcher in a research lab trying to figure out human behavior, particularly among social interactions. So how is it that I'm able to have a conversation with you, Peter, and you don't by default think that I'm lying? You by default think that I am honest. Why is that the case? There's some really good evolutionary psychology research that would suggest why. But there's also some really good interpersonal reasons why you believe what I'm saying and why I, in return, believe what you are saying. So,
and is that the default position for most people? If I go up to some guy on the street and ask him how to get to the market, and he says, go 2 blocks down to the next corner after that and turn right, I'm going to assume that he is not sending me to a movie theater. He's sending me to the grocery store.
Exactly right. It is a default. And there is a wonderful theory in deception scholarship called truth default theory. It is the belief that we assume others are being honest to us most of the time, independent of the actual message's veracity. And that's a big jargony way of saying independent of whether or not it's actually truthful or not. And it's a very adaptive thing. Because
and why is that? Why do we default to believing each other?
Yeah, it's adaptive. So if I were to constantly question whether or not you were telling me the truth or not, Peter, every interaction between us would be really tiring. Like by the end of it, we'd probably need a nap if I had to be so judicious about, was that an honest statement or not? It's fundamentally something that allows us to just get along with our daily interactions. And most of the time it works, right? But you can see how in a news setting where that can become fairly problematic.
So if we move that over to that news setting,
exactly,
we see a headline in a newspaper, or more likely something pops up on our screen today and it says some statement. Does that mean that the theory you cite causes us to believe at first, even if we are cynical professors and cynical journalists, we are going to, our first impression will be, oh no, or oh boy, and we're going
to
believe?
Yeah, so this is fairly robust. So we are not infallible professors. We are humans, as much as our students might think we are. We have other tendencies than that might be more akin to the professorship. But yes, we certainly are falling into the trap of being truth default. And again, it doesn't make us necessarily gullible, but it makes us human. It's a beautiful adaptive thing where we're able to believe others, believe things that we read. And you can see the pitfalls, right? You can see how we read a headline or we read a news story, and then potentially you blend in partisanship, you blend in tribalism, and you suggest, well, of course, there's a good reason why some people believe fake news or disinformation. It's because we believe most things that we read, and we are potentially predisposed to having certain beliefs because of the belief system we already hold.
So before I seek from you guidance for all of us on how to differentiate, how I guess to push back to this natural tendency to believe, I have to call attention to that term fake news, because as a journalist, I rail against it. It is an impossible term. There is no such thing as fake news. There is news which is real, and that's why we call this series Real News.
Yep.
And then there is the deception that is promulgated against all of us by anybody who uses the term fake news And then that term gets accepted by the rest of the populace.
Yeah, so you and I hold the exact same belief, and this is the belief that we teach here in the School of Journalism and Communication, where fake news is not news. It's junk news. It's hoaxes. It's things that you would read on The Onion. And what's really fascinating is that you go to a site like The Onion, and you have the expectation of satire. You have the expectation that what you are reading is not real. However, what disinformation does quite well, or fake news does quite well, is that it masks the idea of being news when really it's not. It's hoaxes. It's junk news. But some of the things that's really fascinating over the past few years that we've been seeing is the proliferation of disinformation, this news that looks like it comes from a legitimate source, or news that might feed on our expectations of a particular source. And then it's intentionally deceptive. That's the difference between disinformation and misinformation. The way I always teach it is D for deceptive, for disinformation, M for mistake. I didn't mean it to be false, but there's the misinformation. I can correct it on the back end, or I can correct it later. I didn't try to dupe you.
And so that leads us to what we're trying to do here, and that is help news consumers make that differentiation. Is there anything that comes out of your work, out of your scholarship, out of your research, that can help those of us that still go out on the front porch and get the newspaper, or those of us who look for information on a screen?
Yeah, so one of the really important findings that I had, a paper with some collaborators, we looked at how well can people detect fake news and disinformation just from reading the headlines that were put on social media. And consistent with a lot of deception research, people are really bad at it. So the accuracy was around 54% in terms of being able to differentiate lies from truths, fake news from genuine news. But the really interesting thing is that when you put it in a social media setting, so basically we mocked up what would look like Facebook, and basically we had two alterations. You either saw a piece of news that was from a friend, or from a stranger, or you saw in a different set of conditions, you saw a piece of news and a headline that came with a lot of likes or a few likes on it. And what was the probability of you thinking that it was credible? Now, the interesting part is credibility didn't really matter if it came from a friend or a stranger, but it really mattered, or it differed based on whether or not there were a lot of likes or a few likes. So people thought it was way more credible if there was a bandwagon behind it, if a lot of people were there.
That almost doesn't help. That almost makes it worse. So what is your advice then to the average Joe and Jane and whomever to muddle through this and not have a head filled with propaganda?
Sure. So my biggest piece of advice would be time. So we don't need to immediately share, and we don't need to immediately jump to providing that information to our network. We can take the 2 to 3 minutes to investigate the source of where this information is coming from, presume the intentions of the author, and then figure out, does this mesh with my understanding of the world? And I think that's a really important part, because we're all smart news consumers. We want to be smart news consumers. You ask people, do they want to tell lies? Of course they don't. That's not a socially desirable thing. Well, then let's take the extra few minutes, be the good investigative, either readers or individuals of society that we want to be, and essentially take that time to then do the hard but good work towards making sure that we're not spreading information that might be false. So that little bit of time actually does make quite a bit of difference. It's a little bit of buffer that you have between being a perpetuator versus someone who's going to pull it back and be a good steward of news.
And yet we're all susceptible. So you and I live in different places in our little college town, and I'm way up on a hill, and early this morning there was a little precipitation, and as hot as it was yesterday, it was so cold that there was just this light dusting of snow on my front lawn.
Wow.
And you just envisioned it. And one, I don't have a front lawn. And two, there was no dusting of snow. And
look how convincing you were. You were so convinced.
Yes. And that's exactly what's so bizarre about the environment we live in now, where there is this onslaught of falsehood by design to try to affect the body politic.
Well, let me give one additional insight. So there's a really wonderful principle in deception research called the plausibility principle. So we can think about this with news, right? Is it plausible that the story you just told, is the story just told plausible? And to an average person living in Eugene right now when it's 90 something degrees, that is implausible, right? So should we then be spreading that news as truth? No, we should not, right? But if we spread it as, oh my goodness, listen to this story that Peter told me, and it's a hoax, it's a joke, but it's something that could be worthwhile to share, possibly that's a good thing. I give the example in my class. I actually purposely, on the day that we talk about deception interpersonally, I come into class 5 minutes late. I do this purposely. And I say, oh, I'm so sorry for being late, everyone. I just had breakfast with Barack Obama. And I get a lot of stares of like, oh my goodness, did he actually, is Barack Obama in Eugene right now? Did he actually just have, I said, it is implausible for me to have breakfast, but why did you believe me? And then we get into the default nature of believing people and the default nature of honesty. And I think it's a really beautiful thing. It's adaptive, but at the same time, it shows the fallibility of humans.
Professor Dave Markovitz from the University of Oregon School of Journalism and Communication, thank you for your insight into deception and how it relates to our consumption of news these days, and for being part of our series here from the University of Oregon UNESCO Crossings Institute for Intercultural Dialogue and Conflict-Sensitive Reporting.
Thank you so much, Peter.